Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f***?
So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hello everybody, Chris here. Just a reminder that this episode was recorded pre-lockdown, back when we could all be in a room together. And second reminder that this season episodes are coming weekly. So today we've got an interview episode and next Thursday we will have Homo Sapiens Extra Lockdown Extended Edition. Enjoy listening.
I was the Grand Marshal of San Francisco Pride, and it was during the time of Bush, and he was trying to amend the Constitution of America to make it that marriage only between a man and a woman.
Oh,
and I wore a t-shirt that said amend yourself, Bush. Hello everybody, I'm Alan Cumming.
I'm Christopher Sweeney,
and this is
Homo Sapiens,
the podcast.
The podcast.
This week's very exciting because one of the most lovely men in the whole world, a huge LGBT icon, pioneer, and chronicler,
yes,
is being interviewed. He's also a dear friend of mine, and I'm not actually interviewing him because I can't remember why I wasn't available or something, was I?
So you weren't available, yeah.
So,
In fact, or other version is... This actually interview was done before you officially joined the podcast.
Oh, so it's just going to be you?
Well, it was just he was around because he was promoting his show.
So the reboot of the 25 years later of
Tales of the City.
I see. I get it.
But Armistead, who is so gone.
I was just going to say the last time I saw Armistead, I have to a picture. I'm sitting on a sofa right now, or a little sort of camp bed, and he was sitting right here in this room with my mum. My mum and Armistead have become these hilarious friends.
Mary Darling.
Mary Darling and Armistead, they love each other, yeah.
Really?
Yeah. She met him in San Francisco, and she was talking about his memoir. She goes, oh, I'm longing to read Armistead's memoir, Alan. I was like, oh my God, I'm nervous about letting you see that. She loved it.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
Armistead's memoir is punchy, right?
Punchy?
Yeah.
It's really fascinating because it's about someone who has done in his life a huge vault fast. Like he was a closeted Republican, pro-Vietnam, all these things. He went in this, there's a really great documentary about him. And in the documentary, they actually find the tapes of him talking to Nixon in the White House. And he's from the South, and he's from the deep South, from like sort of wealthy tradition. There's a certain thing she did. There's a really fascinating thing that he had a little, like when the Vietnam War started, I think, or was it just in general anyway? Anyway, he had a little, some people have got a little kind of tailbone, a little extra bit.
Oh yeah.
Sticking out on their, where we used to have tails.
Your coccyx.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. He had a little lumpy coccyx. Mm-hmm. And so his parents and he agreed to it, got that removed so that it would not impede him going into the military.
Wow.
See, that's what we're talking. Do you know what I mean? That's the kind of background we're talking.
Do you ever, I remember when I got to the age of about 28 and I was like, it means if there was a war, I wouldn't be called up now.
Why?
Because I don't think they ask you if you're that old.
Oh, I see. Oh, really? Oh, I see.
I think they age.
Oh, don't they? Oh. I remember when the Falklands War started and they weren't releasing passports. You couldn't change your passport. And there was talk of National Service coming back in.
You're kidding me.
No, it was really scary. I was at drama school. I thought, oh, crikey. you know, I'm in rehearsal for a Chekhov.
Well, my dad was born in 1932, so he was older when he had me. He had me age 50. And he...
That's not old.
He was... Bitch. He was... He was older when he had me as a kid. And he... so he did... whatchamacallit?
National Service.
National Service.
Right.
So he was in the RAF for 3 years, age 18. And he was a pianist. That's what he loved. And so he started a band. He was called Frank Sweeney, but he started a band called Frank Sway, which was like the jazz band in for the RAF. So he said he never had to do any work because he was always asked to go and play piano in like the officer's mess and stuff.
Oh, fantastic.
Isn't that cool?
Yeah, that's good.
I was like, that's how I would have survived the army had I been enlisted.
So Armistice, and Armistice got quite a lot to say about that because he went to Vietnam and all sorts. Did you have a lovely time with him?
I really did. And he has moved. He's such a quintessentially American person, but has now moved to London. Mm-hmm. And we had such a funny conversation because he now lives near, he lives in Clapham, which is southwest London, but is a bit of a gay area of London. And is where when I had one of my first gay experiences was at the Two Brewers Pub.
Oh, yes.
With a guy whose name I cannot remember. Met him, really fancied him, took me back to his flat.
Oh, I thought you had the experience in the Two Brewers.
Sorry, yes.
It started at the Two Brewers.
It started at the Two Brewers.
Where did he live?
Hendon.
Oh, for goodness sakes. Where's that?
North London.
Oh, like the furthest you possibly go from Clapham.
So clearly I went all the way from Clapham to Hendon.
Did you go all the way when you got to Hendon?
In the attempt of a shag. Well, this was the problem. Because A, he was bonkers. But that was fine because I was like 21.
Surely the Hendon should have been a clue.
Well, yeah, there were many clues, but I was 21, so I was incapable of noticing them. And when we arrived in Hendon, having done a 45-minute cab journey, he was like, oh, I don't have my keys to my house.
Oh, for God's sake.
It's 4 a.m. I'm trying to get a shag here. So then he decided that he would shimmy up the side of his block of flats to climb in the window. And he used, do you know down the side of a building they have a thing called a lightning conductor?
Yes, I'm an intelligent person.
So, well, as in I didn't know that was one. There were, anyway, so he used that, he held onto that and climbed up the building. But when he got halfway up the building, the lightning conductor started to go pop, 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 and he started coming off the wall.
Oh my God.
And I was like, he's going to fucking die and I'm going to be...
I'm still not going to get my shag.
Anyway, then, cut a long story short, he then jumped down. Somehow he got into the building.
How?
Did I get the shag is the question.
No. First of all, how did you get... You can't just say he fell off the building.
But it was something to do with he found another way up to an open window in his flat.
Oh, my God. Did you get a shag?
Yeah.
Oh, well.
It wasn't great, though.
Well, he was probably exhausted after climbing up the bloody wall like
shag's
Spider-Man.
Shag's a shag in my book. Now,
even bad sex is quite good.
Exactly. Any port in a storm, Hendon too. Anyway, so that's all I've got to say about Armistead Maupin. How beautifully, wonderfully poetic of me. But what I do have something to say about is that you wonderful listeners write into us every week and you tell us your agony uncle questions.
Agony uncle.
Agony uncle. So I think we should do a few of those.
Let's do it.
Alan, would you like to kick us off?
Yes. I've got a question from someone who wrote in. It says, what do I say to a parent who won't understand that some people want to be called they? Change is difficult for everyone.
Mm-hmm.
There's a resistance to, in some people's minds, to change and to the norm and to the old guard.
Mm.
And I think it's actually not, it's not really about they, it's about people not being able to accept that things are changing and they have to embrace them. So I think it's more, you have to come at it from a different angle.
And misunderstand, and sometimes I feel like it's got something to do with people don't like that they might have been wrong in the past.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's like, fine, just say, okay, I didn't know, move on.
Absolutely, I think that's in politics and people, you know, the attitudes have changed, things change, laws change.
Yeah, you've got to be able to say, okay, cool, things have moved on and I'm sorry. And I look, I'll give an example. So, for example, in music, directing music videos, which I did for a long time, like a lot of alcohol on set was just a normal thing.
You know? Really?
And I think that now I would say I would absolutely not allow that.
Because, no.
You know, but that's just a total, it was a total norm. And it was, it's probably it, on photo shoots as well, like people being drinking all day and stuff. Like, I've seen that happen a lot.
Gosh, that, wow.
We never get any booze on this podcast, do we?
Well,
lucky
no.
If I can...
We can look longingly at the Arbiki on my shelf.
I just
think actually talking to parents, it's more about just saying, how do you want to be... How do you want to be defined and named?
Mm.
Tell me how you'd like to be... You know, are you a white, old boar? Or are you a middle-aged nice person? Or, you know, just, you know, it's as simple as that. And however someone else wants to be defined, it's our duty as fellow human beings to give them that respect and also we can make mistakes, but just don't be pissed off that someone's changed how they want to be defined.
No,
you know,
we've got better things to be doing.
It's like
time.
When people get you know, think about it when people get married and they change their name. It's the same thing.
Yeah, and no one gets cross about that.
Yeah. Go, is it your turn?
Go on then.
I've got one.
I don't have a thing. You've got the thing.
M writes, my Scottish fiancé refuses to wear his kilt to our civil ceremony. Please advise.
Is that a thing?
What do you mean, is that a thing?
Was that bad?
Well, here's the thing. M, I don't think your Scottish fiancé has to wear his kilt if he doesn't want to. No. You know, just because you're from Scotland doesn't mean you have to wear a kilt. And actually, the thing about kilts, let me give you a little historical...
Aren't they actually French or something?
No. Oh. But the thing about tartans is that, you know, Scottish people used to wear these wrappy things.
Mm-hmm.
Kilts, as we know them now, were kind of modified from those old wrappy things so that we could work in factories during the Industrial Revolution. The tartans we all wear were chosen for us by the Scottish Society of London when George the something went to Scotland to meet all the clan chiefs and each one was given to a different clan chief. And sometimes when people think, oh, I've got this great ancient connection with one other clan. No, it's not, because they ran out and they just give people the same one. So I think the thing is, I love wearing a kilt. I think it's great. I don't think I have to wear a kilt at weddings. It's nice to. I like it. But if he doesn't want to, you don't have to. He's not a performing poodle.
Mm. Absolutely not. Yeah. Now, I should probably say, because I haven't said it for about 4 episodes, if you are having struggles, we're not professionals. You should also seek professional help.
I think if you didn't realise that we are not professional psychologists...
Alan, then you don't know. People hang off your every word. You don't understand this. Haven't you seen the comments on your Instagram? Now, speaking of hanging off every single word...
Let's listen to Armistead Maupin.
Let's
darling, darling Armistead. Or Teddy, as he's known in his family.
Oh.
Tell me about the time, because Ian McKellen came to you and said, should I come out? Didn't he?
Yeah, he did.
So how did that come about?
I think Ian had been seriously considering it all along and wanted a little support in that way. And my partner at the time and I were more than really willing to give him our opinion, you know.
You were friends prior to that?
Mm-hmm.
And he was in the closet publicly?
Yes, I mean, Ian was led a pretty open life. People knew it professionally, right. But he never talked about it.
He
didn't avoid the subject, but...
But then
he didn't bring it up.
And contextually then was obviously a big thing, but also did that sort of then make you an activist? Do you sort of have to then wear
me?
It every day? No, if someone came out in public life like Ian.
Oh, that's often the fear, that I'll have to be an activist.
Really?
But sorry, that's what happens. Mm. That happened to Ellen DeGeneres. She said the very same thing.
Really?
I don't want to be an activist. Well, once you're out and you're... And vulnerable to the public's opinion of you start getting indignant about the difference in the way you're treated, you know?
Yeah.
And Ellen, in her own way, is a big activist just by who she puts on that show.
Mm, totally.
Yeah.
And also, I think there's a benign version of activism, which is just being around. Being around and being gay and just...
Well, I've always been a member of that club.
Yeah. Well, I think that's...
I just think what you can do is just be ordinary about it in public.
And that's what I think people always connected with about your stories, is it was gay, straight, everybody all mixed in together.
Yeah.
And I think that's what I find interesting is people go, what's gay life like? And you go, mostly straight people.
Yeah.
Getting in my way.
Yeah. Yeah, that's been really my call to arms all along. Just be yourself and get on with it. That's all I've done, really. I don't consider myself an activist in the sense that I've taken to the streets a lot.
That's really interesting, yeah.
But I think what I've done is insisted on my visibility. In the early days when I did press, I'd be off on a ramble with a reporter and telling some queer story, and they'd say, of course I won't put that in.
Really?
That's they were hysterical. Censoring me on the spot. And I said, no, I said that to you because I want you to put it in. I want you to say that.
One thing that I remember was when you said publicly about Rock Hudson and that he was gay. And that caused a stir, did it? But you felt it
among had certain to people.
Yeah. But you felt it had to be said.
That was no question it had to be said. First of all, he was clearly a man with AIDS and he wasn't going to be around very long. And I wasn't going to keep silent about how he got that. Because I had lost so many friends, myself. Very brave people who'd been openly gay and dealing with the prejudice. Most of all, I knew that the world would be kindlier to Rock if somebody spoke intelligently about what sort of man he was. And honestly, they were lying. Ross Hunter, his producer, was lying and talking about watermelon diets and things.
And liver cancer.
Liver cancer, just ridiculous, panicked responses. And I couldn't take it. And Rock ended up sending his biographer to meet me. He said, you were the first person I should talk to. So
really?
I realized that he understood what I had done and why I had done it. But a lot of queers didn't.
Really?
Thought it was a betrayal because there was still that code of secrecy. You must not spill the secret. You know, if you were lucky enough to know a movie star, then you were supposed to keep quiet about it. And I didn't sign on for that.
And did you talk to him about it ever before, saying, you know?
I did when we first met. I said, you know, if you told your story, it would make a huge difference in the world. And he was kind of fascinated by the idea.
Really?
But his partner, Tom Clark, said, not until my mother dies. And all I could think of was, if I was fucking Rock Hudson, which I tried briefly, I would be happy to tell my mother about it. And she would probably be happy for me.
She'd be over the moon. Eh?
It just didn't compute with me that there should be shame around that.
We interviewed Nicky Haslam, who I don't know if you've ever encountered him. Do you know him? Sort of British socialite who is an incredible man. But he said, you know, you were saying about that secrecy thing, you know, he said, oh, it's so boring being gay now because everybody knows. And what I loved was that it was secret and you went to these places.
That tiresome old thing. About Gore Vidal thought it was much more fun when you could go and seduce straight men still. Who cares?
Oh, really? Is that his straight men, right?
Well, the idea was you could talk them into it before we had defined queer defined gay.
Right.
It was just buddies having a good time with each other. Well, that's a lovely fantasy, but if you're sucking a cock, you're sucking a cock. I don't need the niceties of that.
Yeah.
He wasn't, by the way, Gore. He once invited me to lunch at Musso and Frank in Hollywood.
Oh, really?
We'd met a couple times. I'd done a story on him, and he wanted me to know, basically, that he was a top.
Really?
That he'd never gone down on anybody, and he'd never been fucked.
Wow.
And I thought he was trying out his memoir on me, basically.
Right, right, right.
But I thought, do you think there are medals for that? What a tragic story. That's the worst thing I've ever heard.
But isn't that something to do with, don't people like to be a top so that they think it's less gay in some way?
Oh, yeah. They do. There we go.
What are you doing while you're in London? Have you got other plans?
We've moved here.
Oh, really? Where are you living?
We've just signed a contract for a house in Clapham South.
I love Clapham. Clapham Old Town and all of that bit. Have you been there?
Yeah, we have. We did a little exploring before we looked at this house. We went to Two Brewers. The Two Brewers.
Oh, my God. Isn't it amazing?
Yeah, I think we're going to like it. I like the absence of traffic on those side streets, which is where we are.
Oh, okay, yeah. And all the Georgian architecture, is it all that bit?
Yeah.
It's kind of...
And the common, big time.
It's great. Have you
got dog loved it.
I was going to say, have you got animals?
Yeah.
What made you... Was it anything about the gayness of the area that made you choose it?
I think it was a little of that. That's Chris, my husband, said... I think it's kind of a queer area. And I said, well, that would be nice.
I didn't even know that was known, if you know what I mean.
Yeah, it's listed in several articles about gayborhoods.
And so you've been to Two Brewers.
I haven't seen hordes of homosexuals yet. But
I'll give you some coordinates. People, aggressive homosexuals queuing for their coffee in the dairy in Clapham Old Town is a sight to behold, let me tell you. But what did you see at Two Brewers?
Nothing, because it was 4:30 in the afternoon.
Oh, okay, fine.
So I saw bartenders. We sat there and had a drink, but we hadn't been to see a show yet.
It's not a big daytime venue. God, I had some of my formative gay experiences in Two Brewers, because it was... It was the suburban answer to a gay bar, you know, like, because I grew up down the road. And so we'd go there and see drag acts and stuff and all the rest of it. It was quite incredible, actually, that it was around.
Have an equivalent experience from San Francisco.
Oh, really? Go
well,
on.
Charles Pierce, who was a famous old drag queen in the early 70s, appeared at a club there called Gold Street. And it just liberated me to the sight of this drag queen walking down this spiral staircase. Answered all the questions I needed answered.
Are you talking about the first time you went to a gay bar in San Francisco and you said you walked in and people were slow dancing to Barbra Streisand?
That was the Rendezvous.
Yes. And you thought, get me the hell out of here.
Yeah. It scared me to death. Now I would just kill to slow dance to Streisand with my husband.
Well, do you know what struck me about that is that I remember my first gay experiences were much more into the frying pan type thing. I was like, okay, this is, you know, I never saw anyone slow dance. And when I heard you say that, I was like, God, no one did that. It was like, it was about...
Well, it was just beginning to be uncool.
Really?
Yeah.
In what respect?
Probably too intimate.
Right.
And gay men were learning to shun that because they were supposed to be butch.
So do you think that's okay? Because that's what I wanted to ask you is, you've spoken a lot about intimacy and I have been fascinated by what you've said. And do you think that there was a period before where people were more intimate and then that moved away?
I only know it mostly from old films that I've seen of gay men. It, private gatherings where they're slow dancing in someone's living room.
And
kind of sweet, the thought of it and the sight of it.
And do you think that is, there's been a sort of butchification then?
Well, that happened in San Francisco in the 70s, yeah.
And what was the trigger for that, if one can quantify it?
I don't know exactly. I know I was very much a part of it. I mean, I went out and bought the fuck me boots and the Levi's and the flannel shirt and got with the program. Yeah. And I kind of enjoyed that aspect of it because that was sexually attractive to me.
Mm. And is there an element of theater about that, or is it to do with ultra masculinity being attractive or something? I don't know.
Probably a little bit of both.
What I think is interesting when I talk on this podcast to a much younger generation than I is that I feel that people really forget so much of history, and people don't know who Harvey Milk is, for example. And which is extraordinary.
Well, there's been an Oscar-winning movie made about him, so they're just idiots.
Yes. But, you know, I kind of go, well, I have to listen to that, you know, and go, okay, well, so,
yeah,
you
know, yeah.
That is a fact. And I wanted to ask you to describe what it was like when you first went there to San Francisco and what it felt like, because I don't think people know how extraordinary it was.
Well, the exhilaration of arriving in a place where you could be fully yourself, go to a bathhouse and have amazing experiences, and hang around afterwards and eat a 9-grain sandwich in front of a big TV set. It was the bathhouses were everything. They were social centers, mostly mazes with sex and private rooms. And for me, it was an amazing discovery. I don't undervaluate ever the importance of sex in those early years at the bathhouses. Anonymous sex, whenever you wanted it.
And what was the value? And I don't mean that in a prim way, as in just to expand on that.
It taught you a lot of things about human nature.
Mm-hmm.
I figured out you could tell the difference between a bastard and a nice guy in the dark.
Really?
By the language of touch.
Cause you
tenderness could come across from a stranger in a dark place.
Mm.
And I fell in love more than I should have over nothing.
Yeah.
I'd meet a guy at a bathhouse and love everything about him and then want to meet him for lunch the next day or whatever.
So funny.
I was really quite tragic about that, but I didn't know anything about how that worked. You know, I had repressed my sexuality for so long. I didn't have any real experience with love. So that was always a mess. The falling in love thing. I did it too quickly and not well, and I had to learn.
And do you, because I felt exactly the same when I first came out and went to gay clubs. I, in retrospect, I just fell in love with everybody. It was like...
You were looking for a husband.
Yeah, and...
So was I.
Yeah.
It only took me 40 years to find him.
And do you, is that... because I sort of had to learn the terrain that everybody was not like that. But I struggled with the random sex thing. And
so did I.
You did?
Yeah. I thought if this is going to be all there is. But then I had to really look at my own sexuality and realize I was having a hell of a good time doing that. And I didn't have to lock anybody down into a husband situation.
Yeah.
In order to find love. This was learned over many years.
Yeah.
I was depressed in the beginning with the idea that gay men were just sexual gadabouts and I would never find anybody who would be faithful. Faithful to me these days simply means the loyalty and love and support of my husband. Not whether or not he's gotten off with somebody else.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
I feel like we're in gay 2.0, which is that the butchness thing we just spoke about and the the monogamy thing is almost like trying to be like straight marriages, trying to be like straight couples, yeah, in order to go, okay, so we're all right, you know, we're okay, we're not too weird.
Yeah.
And actually there's a lot that straight people could learn from gay relationships. And
absolutely. I think that every day,
really?
People in my life.
Really?
And I think you don't want to hear it. Mm. The sister I love so much is having a terrible time at whatever her age is. She's funny about it, but dating on Match.com.
Oh, God, right.
And she's like auditioning them all for the role of husband. And
yes.
I said, why don't you just get a good role in the hay and enjoy that? Which she's been known to do.
Right.
Forgive me, Jane, if you're listening to this. But part of her is still very much a Southern belle who's locked into the notion of this is the way it'll be. And I don't think she'd be any more happy than I would be with a totally monogamous situation.
Mm.
I'm not a whorehound by any stroke of the imagination. I'm 75, for God's sakes. And so it's just not, the urge isn't there. When I do get it up for a marathon sex thing with my husband, usually, sometimes we share, it takes a lot of equipment. It takes a shot in my cock, for God's sakes. But it's worth it because you're a dildo for 2 hours.
Hey, listen, whatever gets you.
There's nothing like that.
No, exactly. Yeah.
So it's a more complicated procedure to be a slut.
Mm.
But it's it's worth it.
Yeah.
And my wonderful husband understands how to make it fun.
Yeah. Just going back a bit to what you were just saying then about one of the things I adore about you, and I know a lot of people do, is this idea of telling the truth. And that takes a lot of effort, you know, all the time. And I wondered how you became that person, because I know that you kind of maybe weren't originally.
No, I was a real little tight ass.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I was in the closet for a long time,
yeah,
too.
Mm.
Posing is something that I wasn't. And then I realized that it worked. Telling the truth works.
Mm.
You don't have to keep track of what your lies.
Mm.
And when you're in my business, both as a writer and a public person, that's important. And that yields benefits. People like it.
Mm.
If you admit the worst about yourself, somebody always says, that's so funny, I do that myself. I never thought. They admire you for doing that.
Yeah, I think, is that to do with this idea that we think our problems are unique and they're just not?
They're not.
They're so universal.
I tell this story about my sister made happen. She told me once that her mother-in-law was so ashamed of herself during gynecological examinations that she took a bag to wear on her head.
Really?
During when she was in the stirrups, she put a bag, and I said, was it the same bag every time? Was it like a paper bag?
Need details.
Or did she have an embroidered thing, you know, like a head cozy? And Jane could see me working up to this, and she said, you are not going to write about this. So I agreed that I wouldn't, and then I went right ahead and did it. I ascribed the practice to an aunt of a character in my novel, Maybe the Moon. And I was in Raleigh, my sister's hometown, my hometown, and I was doing readings, and that was a very popular passage, had been on the tour.
Yeah.
And I didn't realize until I was halfway through the story that my sister was in the audience with her mother-in-law.
Oh my God.
And so I plowed on through it. I told the bag story, and afterwards I went up to Jane and said, I'm so sorry. I really didn't mean to embarrass you. And what did she say?
Mm.
And she said, oh, she was fine. When you got to that point, she just leaned over in my ear and whispered, you see, somebody else does it too.
That's amazing.
And that's the right in a nutshell is the essence of writing, or my writing. Mm. Tell your story, and somebody else will do it too and be amazed that you were on their wavelength.
And how did you, just going back to the very beginning of Tales of the City and just off what you just said there, like how the first time you ever wrote anything to do with Tales of the City was for a newspaper, and how many were commissioned? Was it 30 or 60 were commissioned at first?
I had to give them 6 weeks' worth, so that was 30.
30. And how do you identify what is a story from real life? Do you have a thing where you sort of see it and you go, ah, that's it?
Yeah, I have that instinct.
Really?
I do it still, all the time.
And can you... Is it a feeling, like, or is it more analytical?
Well, I tend to anecdotalize everything in life.
Yes.
I'll ask my husband. I've heard that one. But I do that. I sort of process stories.
Yeah.
I'm going to start a new novel shortly.
Oh, congratulations.
Not a continuation of Tales, but a sort of deep dive into the middle of it. And where Mona, my character Mona Ramsey, in Baby Cakes, she ends up as the mistress of a great manor house in the Cotswolds.
Right, okay, cool.
And I had said in a later book that she had died, and readers were just indignant and said, you need more on Mona. We don't know what happened to Mona. So I'm going to do a book about Mona in the late 80s.
Great.
And her involvement in the Clause 28 battle.
And is that always been in your mind, or is it you kind of go, okay, well, I need this, and you need to piece it?
No, that was recent.
Really?
That was recent, and I put two and two together. I mean, a lot of people have commented about it. They wanted more on her.
Mm.
And I thought, I'd really like to do that. I'd like to go back in time and explore that.
Did you find with discussions around the new Tales, which I thought was utterly brilliant, by the way, so I'm so glad
you like, you've seen it all?
I've seen episode one, and I just was, seeing her come over that bridge was so exciting.
Yeah,
to
it
just
is,
go,
isn't it?
How did you feel seeing that for the first time?
I knew what was coming, of course, but
yeah.
A lot of things came together in that. Just Laura, seeing Laura there.
Yeah.
Knowing how many things she can communicate in a scene with just her eyes, her expression.
She's extraordinary, isn't she?
She's one of the great actresses, and she's ours. I mean, as long as we want to do this thing, she's going to be there.
She makes it look so incredibly simple, and it's not.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. She's amazing. And I am so happy that it still feels like Tales.
Really?
Yeah.
Mm. And because I actually think this is a bit of a glib question, but people love it. In terms of, you know, when people say, why now to do something, they go, why now? And I never myself truly know the answer. But did you have any of those, like, what were the things that were coming up about now? And what it is to be queer now, because it is so incredibly different. Did you talk a lot about that?
Yeah, I know that the writer's room did. It was discussed. And everyone agreed that an intergenerational thing would be interesting, explaining yourself to young people and vice versa.
Yeah, it's great.
We've got intergenerational sex in several instances in this thing. You don't know what I'm talking about yet, but
yes.
You will.
Okay, good.
And the whole complication of a trans man who's identifying as a man now and taking testosterone for it, who's falling out of sexual love with his lesbian girlfriend. Heartbreaking in a way. It's about them learning to love each other and let each other go.
I thought that was one of the most touching moments, and the intergenerational trans conversation, you know, which I thought was...
Yeah, Anna and Jake.
Yeah, it was just incredible to see. I have never seen that. And it was just dealt with really beautifully.
Yeah, and they really... That was something I introduced 10 years ago when I brought Jake in, because somebody had to take care of Anna, I realized. Mm. I moved her out of Barbary Lane because the steps were just going to be too much for her, I decided, in the novels.
Yes.
We had to have Barbary Lane back in the series. We had to, and we all got so excited about it. Seeing it again, it was like returning home.
Just on the new series and what did you find that you were so most struck with about how different it was to portray queer life based on the stories that are in, you know, the new series?
How is it different from the...
Well, yeah, I was just interested by, you know, I love the conversation at the beginning where they're saying, you know, they didn't know that we were queer. And I just thought that was so now, you know?
Yeah, and to have that argument.
Yeah, and how do you feel about that kind of stuff?
Well, in my own life, I love it when somehow or other the word husband comes up when Chris and I are in public, because that feels to me like both a political act and a romantic one. I still feel the need to bear witness to a joyful queer life, me of me, I don't know. I enjoy it.
And if you have an opinion, do you think about 19-year-old queer kids today? Do you think they're lucky? Do you think they're just obsessed with Instagram? Do you think...
I think they're 19.
Yes.
You know, I don't want to judge myself at that age, and I'm not going to judge them in any way. Yeah, some people are obsessed with Instagram, and it's a crashing bore, as we sort of illustrate in the series. I'm not fond of, the Kardashian culture. I don't know. There are 19-year-olds out there right now who are bright, intelligent people who are openly gay and living their lives, and I salute them. I love to meet them. I do meet them.
I'm thinking about your activism, and do you think the next generation are continuing that enough?
I don't know what I don't know what the answer to that is.
No.
Enough, what is enough, you know?
I suppose what I'm thinking
ultimately, the only responsibility is to yourself. That's what I've always felt.
Really?
And then you will be part of a movement if you are honestly yourself. Mm. And abandoning your fears about being queer.
And just, I suppose that comes back to truth, doesn't it?
Yeah.
Just be your own thing.
Yeah.
Represent that.
It's been my only message from the beginning. It's why I was, and am still obsessed with closet cases.
Really?
That's the least thing you can do if you're a queer, is just be happy and open about it.
You said something lovely about that, where you said, you know, I've worked out how to say what I want with sex. Was it that?
Yeah.
Yeah.
If you trust the person you're with, if you're with the right person, you can both do that and have some great fireworks.
Do you think there's a link between that and the sort of the quick and emotionless sex that can be in the gay bars and all of that, that people aren't really doing intimacy?
They aren't. And that the intimacy is a great addition to sex.
And why isn't that happening, do you think?
I don't know.
And what held you back from saying what you wanted for so long?
Maybe not being with the right person. I don't know. It's like... it's hard to acknowledge whatever you want sexually exactly.
Yes. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I think everybody has some problem with that.
Oh, I totally agree. And I think it's not spoken about enough.
Well, I'm with one of the more sexually sophisticated men on the planet. That sounds weird, but But he understands all of those things.
Your husband.
He started, Daddy Hunt.
Which is how you met, eh?
Yeah, kind of. I saw him on Daddy Hunt and then met him on the street.
So you chased after him in the street, is that right?
Well, I...
It's been chased.
excuse me.
Yeah.
I heard you were screaming down the down the Castro.
We both turned. We did the little stop and twirl thing that was so popular in the 70s and 60s and any other time, I guess.
So if you pass someone on the street and you...
You turn and look, and if they're looking at you, then...
They were queer as well.
That's a signal, yeah.
I love that.
And it was great that I, of course, I said the dumbest thing in the world. Mm. Didn't I see you on a website? But it turned out to be very effective because Chris ran the website.
Oh, see.
So he was thrilled that I
very proud.
Had been on that website.
And also, here we are, however many years later. But what I loved was the detail that you saw him on the website, but you printed it out and stuck it on your wall.
I did.
You thought he was so handsome.
I thought he was so handsome, and I put him up there to taunt my younger friends because he specified that he only liked men that were 45 or older.
And through that relationship, I loved hearing you talk about how he made you feel great about yourself in a way that you never had felt before.
Well, in my antiquity, there's nothing like, and it's amazing. It's a lot of young men are embarrassed to say that they like older guys. Mm. And he sort of broke through that for everybody. We're constantly meeting couples on the street that say, we met through Daddy Hunt. Mm. A couple of friends of Ian's.
Mm-hmm. Really?
At Ian the McKellen. Pub the other night. Yeah. Regular members of the quiz night at the Grapes, you know, Ian's pub.
There. Yes, yes.
They met.
Because of
Clear Daddy Hunt.
Really?
Yeah. And we hear it all the time. There's many people that thank Chris for opening their eyes about that, as thank me about my books.
Well, that's because they both come back to truth, don't they?
Yeah.
You spoke the truth, people came, Chris spoke the truth.
I remember looking at his site.
Yeah.
And there'd be a picture of a paunchy man, you know, and Chris, who wrote the captions, would say, look at this hot daddy, you know. And I look at it and think, well, that doesn't seem to be hot to me. He taught me how to look at other older guys.
Yeah.
And appreciate it.
And I don't feel there's any room for that anywhere in when you say, you know, Instagram's dull, but it's so homogenous the way people, that I find that gay people look today. And I think gay men have this idea of being like this muscly, topless thing. You're not on Instagram, are you?
I am.
Oh, you are?
I don't have any muscly, topless, whatever that is. But
shirtless, you know. I always love on Instagram to go back, to scroll back to the time when they became...
When they were little geeks and...
Yeah, you know, you can always see there's like a box of about 9 pictures where they become the sort of, oh, okay, I'm going to make my Instagram a proper Instagram now.
Right,
where it's lots of pictures of me shirtless and it's going to be, you know...
Yeah.
It's quite funny.
Vanity is never very attractive, really.
No, it really isn't.
Even if they've got something, they've got the goods.
Mm.
The fact that they're deliberately showing it to you is somehow less appealing.
The most attractive thing is them not knowing it.
Yeah, exactly.
That's what I adore about my husband William, is that he's very handsome, but he has no idea. It's very interesting, isn't it?
That's a great quality.
Yeah, it really is. This is a question that I wanted to ask you that you might not be able to answer, but it doesn't matter. Who do you think, in terms of writing, is doing now what you did then, which was so extraordinary at the time?
They broke the mold when I...
Good, yes.
I don't know.
But is there anyone who you know...
I love Andrew Sean Greer.
Okay.
Wrote a book that won the Pulitzer last mm-hmm. year called Less.
Oh, yes. Yeah, I have it on my bedside table.
You have it there. I'll read it because it's wonderful. It's about it. A gay writer.
Yeah.
And who's traveling the world.
Mm.
And it has several great jabs at the whole gay writer culture.
Brilliant.
And he's a friend. And he's such a good guy that I don't feel even vaguely envious of his Pulitzer.
Mm-hmm.
I feel vaguely envious of his hot body, which I saw at Burning Man.
You went to Burning Man?
Twice.
How was it?
Oh, it was wonderful. Again, it's one of those things in my life that wouldn't have happened without Chris. He got the RV in order and, you know, made costumes for us and knew exactly how it worked.
What is it like there? I have never been.
Dusty.
Mm-hmm.
Very
That's
dusty.
Why we went.
It's hallucinatory. Really? You feel like you're looking at some carnival on Mars. It's just amazing. Really?
And so what have you got planned next? What would you like to see? You're going to do your book?
I'm going to do my book.
Mm-hmm.
I've got a story that I have to write for Audible, which I think will be fun because I get to read it. I'm going to tell a story.
Oh, wicked.
Audible.
Yeah.
But that's... Hope there's nothing else for a while.
Mm. And you're living here for the foreseeable?
Yeah.
Fantastic.
Buying antiques for the house in Clapham.
Brilliant. Wonderful.
You'll let me know if that was a terribly bourgeois thing to do, won't you?
What, buying antiques for your house in Clapham? It's a little bourgeois.
Even as I say it, I feel that it is. My early memories of London when I came here at 19 was suddenly discovering queers in these... antique malls, you know, in the shopping
yes.
things, suddenly thinking, oh my God, why are all these men looking at me? And
really?
Yeah, you could feel the energy.
So that was probably Northwest London, wasn't it? Is that where all the
Hampstead
antique...
Hampstead.
Yes. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Well, now you've got two boroughs on your doorstep.
Yeah.
How exciting. Thank you so much for taking the time.
Thank you, it was fun.
Really appreciate it.
I gave him wonderful recommends for antique shops now that he's a
Oh, that's nice.
Brit. Because
I must say hello to him, actually. I'm not...
I emailed him loads of little all my favourite secrets of where to go, where to get antiques. And so hopefully his house will be filled with treats.
Oh, wait, are we back? I didn't realise.
Yeah, this is us back.
I was just texting Armistead.
Alan's just texting Armistead.
I wonder if he's got... He probably doesn't have his American Armistead. Number anymore, does he?
Tales of the City, I think it's probably still on Netflix. Go watch it.
I would think so.
He's an extraordinary man. We've had a lovely time listening to it.
Shall we do a little message to him right now?
Yeah, go on then.
Oh, he's not doing it. Armistead, it's Alan and...
Christopher Sweeney.
Who interviewed you for Homo Sapiens. And we're right now recording the little bits that go either side of your interview. And we're actually talking to you on my text thing as we do it. This is like so meta.
And we're talking about Armistead. If you remember, I sent you some antiques recommendations like Ardingly Market, and I want to know how you got on.
So, and I'd like to see you and Chris, Armistead, and send you lots of love. I'm here to the end of March. Love you. Bye. So, that was it. So how about this, everybody? Write to us at hello@homosapienspodcast.com.
Oh, he's good.
And send us, what do you call it again? Agony Uncles.
Send us your Agony Uncle questions.
Review show. Tell us what you think of us.
Tell us what you think of Armistead.
Be kind. And also, if you'd like to buy a delicious t-shirt or sweatshirt, which I am modelling on alancumming.com/shop, just click on the picture of me and you'll be taken to like this place. What's it called?
Scorched Earth, isn't it?
Ever Bright, what?
It's...
event planning, blah, blah. What is it?
It's everpress.com/homosapiens.
There we go.
So that's where you can get your t-shirts and jumpers. Uh-huh. They're selling like hotcakes, people, by the way.
Are they? When you see a visual, you'll see the colours and you'll see them on me. It's a white one and a grey one.
There's a white t-shirt, grey sweater. You know, we might build out the collection as we go. Send us your photos of you in the t-shirts and jumpers. We'd love that.
That'd be nice. And we can describe them to people.
Well, we can just look at them and go, oh, lovely.
Just now, be in touch with us. We're very needy.
Just stay in touch. And also, if you want to win a t-shirt, you can go to Apple Podcasts and review us. And we will pick Review of the Week on Homo Sapiens Extra.
Review of the Week. week.
And we get a free jingle from Alan because that's what he's like. He just contributes.
Fair giving.
You know?
Fair giving. All right.
It's been a pleasure.
It's been lovely and lovely to celebrate the darling that is Armas Timmelman. Good night, everybody.
Good night and good luck.
Bye.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Powered by Spirit Studios.